The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salazar. So much ground to cover in today's show. We'll discuss Atletico Madrid. They've opened up an even bigger league atop La Liga, plus FIFA's stern response to the notion of a European Super League. Alejandro Moreno will join us for those conversations, but we'll put that off for a bit. A historic result today at Anfield. Liverpool losing to Burnley by a final score of 1-0. A late penalty for Ashley Barnes. The difference, and this result significant on so many levels. Four matches in a row without a goal in the league for Liverpool. A 68-match home unbeaten streak snapped. You've got to go back to early 2017, almost 4 years ago, for the last time Liverpool lost a Premier League game at Anfield. They now sit 6 points off the league lead. For more perspective, we welcome in Stuart Robson, Shaka Hislop, Julian Laurent. Robbo, I'll start with you. What's gone wrong at Liverpool?
Well, in the last few games, the final pass hasn't been quite good enough. They haven't played with the fluency. Today, they got it into some very good areas. I mean, Trent Alexander-Arnold must have had the ball 20, 30 times inside the Burnley box with time to pick out a cross or play a cross into the box, and he picked out the wrong option. And the movement in the box, particularly in the first half, wasn't good enough. Origi wanted to come short at times and rather making dynamic runs. Oxlade-Chamberlain was playing on the right-hand side. He's not really a front player, so his movement wasn't great in the box. And Mane was trying to make the right sort of runs, but the deliveries from Trent Alexander-Arnold weren't good enough. He should have just been whipping balls in between the goalkeeper and the back four and allowing people to make runs into it. He was trying to pick people out. So they're lacking confidence at the moment. You can tell that as the game wore on. And I thought it was a disappointing display from Liverpool.
Shaka, it wasn't for a shortage of opportunities. Perhaps nothing more symbolic of Liverpool recently than that Origi miss, handed an opportunity and couldn't put it in.
Yeah, it was a rather ridiculous defensive error that led Origi in, and he had a lot of ground to cover before taking the chance on. And let's be honest, as good as Nick Pope was all game long, he shouldn't have stood a chance. But Origi went for a little bit too much pace, got the other side of the crossbar. But it kind of summed Liverpool up over recent weeks. They've been getting opportunities, but I just feel too many in that squad seem to have misplaced their shooting boots.
Jules, I think it was earlier this week, Jurgen Klopp said it's not a catastrophe. Is it a catastrophe now?
It's crisis, certainly. I don't know if he thinks that or if he will feel that it's a catastrophe, but there's a point where I think you have to be worried. And if you're Jurgen Klopp, and you saw his frustration at halftime when he had that argument with Sean Dyche when they were coming into the tunnel to go into the dressing room at halftime. It shows on the club, it shows on the players that not only they've lost confidence, but tonight there was nothing in that game. There was no energy, there was no press, there was no ideas, there was a lack of efficiency in both boxes. There was just nothing. I mean, they had 40 crosses, only three were successful. 3 out of 40, are you kidding me? They've got the two best fullbacks in the world, well, arguably, and they can't even get a good cross right. I mean, this was one of the worst performances I've seen from Liverpool in a very, very long time.
Robbo, Jules mentions the interaction, and that's a nice way of putting it, between Sean Dyche and Jurgen Klopp at halftime. It's not the first explosion we've seen this season from the German manager. It seems like there's always something that has him upset. What do you make of Klopp's continuing frustration?
I don't think he's handling the pressure particularly well. We've seen it all season. We've seen him moan about the fixture list. We've seen him moan about injuries. We've seen him moan about a lack of five substitutions. We've seen him moan about other teams getting more penalties than Liverpool have got. He's now taking it out on the players as well. He's moaning. His actual demeanour hasn't been good. And I think that rubs off on the players. And I think it rubs off on the opposition, who see that they're getting at Liverpool at the moment. And Liverpool aren't the confident side. Jurgen Klopp has been at his best when he's all smiles, he's happy, he's compliments the opposition, he cajoles his own players. That's when he's at his best. At the moment, he seems as though he's got a problem with the world and everything about it. So I think Jurgen Klopp needs to have a look at himself and just change the way he's managing at the moment.
Shaka, after the match, Klopp came out and said it was his fault they lost today. You agree?
I'm not sure what more Jurgen Klopp could have done, in all honesty. On the day, as the boys rightly pointed out, they had possession, they had opportunities, but the final ball just wasn't there. I think quite clearly what you're seeing are bigger issues to Liverpool right now. That front three that have been so reliable, and I know they didn't all start, but they all finished. But that front three who had been so reliable for the last two or three seasons, all of a sudden firing blanks. And then he has to try to change things, try to rotate in giving some of them a rest, maybe giving others an opportunity. Origi is not the answer. And as much as Liverpool and Klopp were linked with Timo Werner for a lot of last season, given how we started at Chelsea, maybe they dodged a bullet there. But it showed that they don't have real depth on the bench to go to give players a rest or to change things or just to shake things up. And that maybe is Jurgen Klopp's burden to bear. That being said, if you're a team of Werner and you're highly sought after, or any other player, you're highly sought after by Europe's big clubs, given what Liverpool, or given how good Liverpool have been for the last two seasons, you think you just go in there to fit in, to be a bit part player, and that maybe isn't the right option. So it was a tough time for Liverpool to strengthen, and now that's maybe coming back to haunt them.
Robbo, it's five games now where neither Roberto Firmino or Mo Salah have scored. They didn't start the match today. Do you think that was a mistake from Klopp?
No, I'm not sure it's a mistake. He must know whether they're fully fit or whether they needed a rest or whatever. I thought when Mo Salah came on, he had one or two good opportunities. At least he was making forward runs. At least he was trying to make things happen. He was playing off the front, trying to get it again. Firmino didn't really do too much. He had a chance when Trent Alexander had a shot and he tried to deflect it goalwards. But Firmino didn't affect the game. I thought Mo Salah did try and affect the game and looked at probably their best player when he did come on. But, you know, what he didn't do, Jurgen Klopp, he made those changes to the team, but there was no energy. Jules just mentioned there was no real energy around the side. When Henderson, who apparently is not fully fit, and Milner are playing, they play with that drive in midfield, they win the ball back. But when you got Thiago and Shaqiri and Wijnaldum, who wasn't at his best today, there wasn't that dynamism in midfield. So that was one of the problems.
At the end of the day, this match decided by the late penalty. Alisson seemed to not think he was guilty. Shaka, was he?
Yes, he was. Alisson actually didn't catch Barnes with his hands, but he missed the ball. And then his momentum takes him into Barnes. Maybe Barnes wanted to hurt Alisson. He could have, but that's not his responsibility. If Alisson is committed and his momentum is taking him into the striker, it's not on the striker to avoid that contact. Penalty for me.
Robbo, for you?
I can see why the referee gave it. I thought Barnes actually then put his foot down to try and make contact with Alisson, but once the referee had given it, it wasn't going to be overturned. So, I'll go along with it.
Jules, you know, Jurgen Klopp hasn't always prioritized the FA Cup in his time at Liverpool, but with the odds of winning the league perhaps dwindling, do you think maybe some of the decisions today, as far as the lineup are concerned, were with an eye towards Sunday and the game against Manchester United?
Oh, 100%. I don't think there's any doubt that if Salah and Firmino are on the bench tonight, it's because they are going to start on Sunday against United, because they also were tired before the game. And you think at home against Burnley, this is a good opportunity to give them a rest, like Salah was rested against Crystal Palace and on the bench and only came on late. Those kind of games, you know, they can't play every single game. And also, as we've been saying many times on the show, they were tired. There was a need for rotation in that team for players to come in, to try to step in. It didn't work out, but there's no doubt that they were on the bench because they would start on Sunday, and because Klopp always had in his mind, and probably Henderson, I think they didn't take any risk with Henderson tonight to keep him and make sure that he's ready for Sunday as well. So of course that played a big part. Let's say they had played the League Two game on Sunday, it would have been a very different lineup tonight, I think.
Shaka, do you think in some way it's an admission from Klopp that maybe the chances of winning the Premier League aren't quite what they were a month ago, and now the FA Cup is their best shot at a trophy?
Yes, but also when you're in the middle of a bad run, and let's not try to disguise the fact that Liverpool most certainly are, you want these games to just even for a change of pace and to get 90 minutes, a good 90 minutes, get a win and get things back on track. I think especially in the early rounds of the FA Cup, that can prove really beneficial to teams like Liverpool, who maybe are struggling for form right now.
Rabah, the last time they met, it was terrible. Not at all what we were expecting. You think that was just because it was a league match? Maybe there's still a lot to play for. Now that it's single elimination, FA Cup, will we get a good match on Sunday?
I'm not sure we're going to see a Liverpool team play with confidence or a Manchester United team play with confidence, but I think we'll see a much better game. I think it'd be really competitive, and I'm glad that probably both teams are going to put out their full sides and they're really going to go for it. Because although it's a cup game, I think it could have a bearing on the league. I've seen teams, I saw Arsenal once, being top of the table by 5 points, go to Manchester United, put a second string side out. Manchester United beat them 4-0. And that gave the momentum to Manchester United, who then went on to win the league. So this game is an important one, both for the cup and for the league.
Rabah, right now, how do you assess Liverpool's title chances?
At the moment, I think Manchester City are a far better side. I think Manchester United, at the moment, are a better side. And unless Liverpool can get some of their players back playing at their very best, I think they could end up third or fourth.
Shaka, any hope of a turnaround for Liverpool?
Not to win the league. Right now, I think Liverpool's best hope is to finish top four and at least guarantee Champions League football for next season. Get as many of the players to get a decent rest in the off-season. And I know there are international competitions coming up, but that aside, given the disruptions of 2020 and their successes over the last couple of seasons, if you're Liverpool, you're thinking, let's just get to the end of the season, get into the top four, get Champions League football, get players rested as best we can, again, given the international distractions, and hope to regroup and reassert yourself at the top of the Premier League next season, because this season is all but gone.
Jules, they're only 6 points off the top of the table. Should we be burying Liverpool already?
No, I think, of course, they can still win the title. They still will host City at Anfield. They will go to Old Trafford. But if they win those two games, you know, they so many things can happen. We've seen how very special this season has been. You know, we saw incredible results. We saw good runs, bad runs for pretty much everyone. So right now, it's tough for them. As we said, it's a crisis. And I think the schedule coming up, I think they played five of the top seven teams now in the next few weeks. So this will be tough. Maybe it's better for them, by the way, to play against the top teams, because against the bottom six this season, they only won once against Sheffield United and lost to Burnley and Drew everybody else, Brighton, Newcastle, Fulham. So maybe it's better for them to play the top six instead of the bottom six, and they will play the top six now in the weeks to come. So I don't think we can write them off at all for the title.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Plenty more ground still to cover on this show, including Extra Time, which you can find daily over on our ESPN FC YouTube channel. We take your questions straight from social media. What could go wrong?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Atletico Madrid coming from behind on Thursday, away against Eibar. Luis Suarez with a goal late in the first half and then a penalty late in the second half. This one finished 2-1. Here's what it means for the top of the Spanish table. Atleti, 7 points ahead of Real Madrid. And not to be forgotten, they still have that game in hand. For more, we welcome Alejandro Moreno to the show. Julian Laron still with us. Ale, were Atleti deserving winners today?
No, not really, but to be quite honest with you, is them finding a way of winning the match. A game that was littered with mistakes all over the field for both teams. A game in which Eibar actually did a somewhat better version of Atletico Madrid in terms of how physical it was. They actually had more, significantly more fouls in the game than Atletico Madrid, 24-9. And so you thought that if there was going to be a winner, it was going to be indeed Eibar. They go up 1-0. The goalkeeper, Dimitrovic, scores of a penalty kick. And then there didn't seem to be anything happening for Atletico Madrid, but then a mistake by Eibar in clearing the ball from the back, a rebound for Llorente, and then Luis Suarez scores that goal, 1-1. And I think at that point you may have thought, you know what, this is the more likely score. Neither one of these teams really deserve to win this match. They haven't done enough to win it. And then Luis Suarez, in the most Luis Suarez way, finds himself behind the back line. Slightest of contact, slightest of touches, he goes down, penalties given, they go to VAR, not enough to overturn it, not enough to say that it was a clear mistake by the referee. And then Luis Suarez, because he is shameless, and I love that about him, he goes on and takes the penalty kick himself. Not only does he take it himself, but does a little panenka, a little dinky over the top just to kind of continue the humiliation of Dimitrovic, the goalkeeper, and Eibar as well, and just kind of rub it in. 2-1 Atletico Madrid, important result, deserved? I don't think so.
Jules, what'd you make of the Atleti performance?
No, I agree with Ali. I don't think they deserve to win, but hey, they find a way. It's a bit cliche, but this is the luck of the champions as well. You know, only once before this season they went behind. That was against Real Madrid in the derby. They didn't win that game. This time they came back to win it. They benefited from a big mistake. They scored a penalty that I'm not really sure is a penalty. But what's striking me, one is, of course, the importance of the result. While Real Madrid were humiliated in the Copa del Rey by a fourth-tier team, while Barcelona was struggling against Cornella tonight, again in the Copa del Rey, and missing, embarrassing themselves by missing two penalties. Again, Ramon Juan, they still qualified. But yet, in that time, Atletico won a game that they should not really have won and go even further up in the table. And the other thing is that Luis Suarez is 33. He's walking on that league. He's walking on that league when he has one knee left. He's overweight. And yet he still finds himself by scoring 12 goals now he's on. And by being so decisive that I underestimated completely the impact that he would have had on this Atletico team when they signed him, I have to be honest. But he's walking on La Liga right now. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that.
Ale, has Luis Suarez surprised you with what he's done so far this season?
Yes, but more importantly, what he has done, he has surprised Ronald Koeman, who didn't want him. Hey, good decision, Ronald. Good decision, Barcelona. And what is he doing right now? Well, he's on top of the scoring table in La Liga. And though I thought that there would be, I suppose, a letdown in terms of what his productivity would be, I still thought that he would be a useful player. And when we talk about the impact that he has had on Atletico Madrid, as Julian just alluded to it, let's not forget that part of this discussion is also the impact of the hole he left in Barcelona. So it's a double impact. It's what you do for Atletico Madrid, and it's what you do against Barcelona in leaving this team behind. They haven't figured out who to play in that position because they don't have anybody who can play in that position. And Atletico Madrid is loving the fact that this guy is scoring game winners, leading matches, and they're top of the league.
Jules, is there any chance we get a decent title race? You've mentioned the frustrations, the struggles of late for Barcelona and Real Madrid. I mean, neither of them look like they're going to compete.
Right now, I mean, you know, we said before that after the derby that we felt Real Madrid could come on a good run now, and that maybe the defeat in the derby for Athletic could derail a little bit their momentum and the season. And I think at that time, both me and Ali said, okay, yeah, maybe Real Madrid are going to come back and win this. Now, it's not happening. I don't think it will happen. I don't think Athletic can lose that title. They can go 10 points clear, as you said, with the remaining game in hand that they have. Of course, there will be the Champions League and a lot of things can happen, but you feel certainly that the momentum they have, the way that they can find a way to win those games when they're not really on top, they're not good on the night. They were not good today. They didn't play good football. They didn't create much, to be fair, and they still won. And I just think this is what they do. And because they defend so well, because they've got Luis Suarez in that kind of form, if he gets injured, then I'm not sure Moussa Dembele can take over and have the same efficiency. But right now, I think it's really hard to see anybody else but them to really win this Liga.
Ale, will it even be close, or is Atletico Madrid going to win this thing running away?
Well, I don't think that Atletico Madrid is built to run away from anybody. I don't think they're that kind of team. However, what they are built on is consistency. And you don't get outstanding performances from Atletico Madrid, but you also don't get really poor performances. And so there's somewhere in between. And in between, you get consistency that you're not getting from Barcelona, and that certainly you're not getting from Real Madrid. And those are the teams that have an opportunity, I guess, an opportunity to perhaps challenge for this. So while Atletico Madrid continues in that consistent level of play, Real Madrid is one of these things. And Barcelona is hey, every which way. And there is no real opportunity for either one of them, either Real Madrid or Barcelona, to generate enough momentum to truly threaten Atletico Madrid.
We keep talking about Real Madrid and Barcelona. Gentlemen, let's change topics a little bit here, because both of those clubs, their names always come up when the idea of a European Super League is discussed. Well, today, FIFA came out with a statement on the European Super League, and it's pretty direct. Here's the most important part. Quote, any club or player involved in such a competition would, as a consequence, not be allowed to participate in any competition organized by FIFA or their respective confederation. Translation, that means no World Cup if you're a player on a club in a European Super League. Jules, why now from FIFA?
Maybe now because they certainly feel that is happening, or certainly is getting closer and closer, that the biggest clubs, and we saw in the pandemic, Florentino Perez flying to Turin to meet with Agnelli to discuss the Super League. Clearly, they had nothing else to discuss. What were they going to discuss? Bringing Cristiano back to Madrid? No, they were there together to discuss the Super League. We know that Agnelli is the head of the ECA, and he's obviously, one, he's a very important man in football, in European football, but two, has a key role to play in the creation of a Super League. And I think maybe FIFA and the other confederation, UEFA especially, were thinking, this is not good. This is not looking good. It's taking shape. It's taking form. They have the format now. They have the ideas. It seems like they also have the backing financially to create that Super League. And maybe that's why FIFA came out strong with that statement, because they're a bit scared.
Ale, this puts the players between a rock and a hard place. Put yourself in their shoes. Would you ever be willing to give up an opportunity at a World Cup?
I wouldn't, personally, I wouldn't, but we're in a different world nowadays, and so the players today may not feel as strong a bond with their national team as they once did. I can only speak for myself. If indeed this was a reality and this Super League was taking place, but that would take me out of my national team competition, I don't see how I place myself at that level. I really could not see myself just turning my back on the possibility of playing with my national team and playing international competition, whether that's Copa America in my case or whether that's a World Cup as well. I just don't see how you do that. This is a power play. It's a power play by FIFA and saying, okay, all right, you guys are meddling and kind of meeting and doing all these things. This is what we can do. We control the game worldwide. So this is how we defend ourselves. This is how we shield ourselves. See what you do now. What I also find interesting is with Gianni Infantino saying, well, you want the accomplishment on the field to be rewarded. You want promotion and relegation. You want the fairness of the game and the relationship built on the field and all that, all of those things, which, yeah, fine and well. Gianni, who are you kidding? You may be saying it's about that. This is about money, mm-hmm. And this is about power. And it's the power that FIFA is afraid of losing. And it's the money that FIFA is afraid of losing. This is not about feel-good stories. This is about good old pocket change, baby. Huh? When they're offering these teams that are going to be in the Super League somewhere around 350 million euros to be part of this, that attracts the attention of any club and certainly attracts the attention of FIFA. That's what they're coming out with a statement.
Jules, the cynic in me sees this statement from FIFA as maybe the beginning of a long negotiation, them trying to cut their way into a piece of this pie. How do you think this plays out?
So I think the Champions League right now, because this is what we're talking about, is those clubs are not really happy with what the Champions League bring them, especially, like Ali just said, financially. So I think the Champions League needs a revamp right now. It needs redoing, rethinking. It needs a new format, a new version of it. And I think this is very possible that this will happen instead of the Super League or before the Super League, maybe. But I think this is the core of the problem. Then you could also argue that FIFA right now looking to extend the Club World Cup, having more teams there. And maybe if you combine the two, that means more money for the bigger clubs who could always be at those Club World Cup competitions and things like that. So there's other ways. And by the way, I'm not actually sure that the threat that FIFA put out today in that statement is, one, actually legal. And two, I'm not really sure if the European Commission, for example, will stand and be happy with FIFA just detecting what a player can or cannot do. Because right now, if a private investor wants to create a Super League, a bit like what we saw during the preseason with the ICC or other things like this, I'm not really sure someone can actually stop them in that way by saying, okay, Messi, you want to play there? Well, you're not going to go to the World Cup or to the Copa America. I'm just not sure it works like this. And I think if really FIFA and UEFA and the other confederations wants to press that matter, I think this could be a very long legal fight as well. And I'm not sure anyone wants that.
Ale, the purists will absolutely hate this, and I understand why. But as fans, isn't this kind of what we want? Don't we want Bayern Juve every week?
Well, maybe you want Bayern Juve every week, and certainly those are going to be big games. But you want Bayern Juve every week because they've earned their way into that competition, because they've won the games that they needed to win in order to have that matchup. Not a matchup that has been created off the field somewhere else. You want the matchups to be decided because of the achievements that you and your teammates are able to put out on the field. And in the end, I think as a player, competitively, that's also what you want. You want an opportunity to play and be the very best that you can at the highest level possible. When you do that, then there's a sense of accomplishment in that, okay, when we play Bayern Munich and when we play Juventus and when we play Barcelona and when we play Real Madrid, it's not, we're not playing the Barcelona that played against Cornellà. No, we're playing against big boy Barcelona in Champions League, and this is our moment to shine. And so I think you want those matchups, but you want the teams to create those matchups. You don't want these matchups to be manufactured.
Jules, if you had a vote, would you vote yes or no on a European Super League?
Yes, I do, because I do think the Champions League, as in its current version, maybe it's a bit dated, maybe it is something a bit different. Just do things differently. Maybe instead of having all those groups of four, you can have two big groups and those teams can face each other. And I think there's a lot of things you can do to make the current Champions League better. And maybe you can find a way of earning more money for the club and they'd be happier with the prize money. And so there's a lot of things we can do. So if it's a Super League with 15 clubs that are always there, and then you invite five more clubs to make it 20, you're not sure how the five are invited, how they qualify. I'm not sure that's what I want, because I still like to see Ajax reaching the semi-final, you know, with the great young teams. I like to see those smaller clubs, if you want, or the clubs that maybe you would not see in this Super League because they would not be invited. I like those stories too, so I'm sure there's a way, and I'm sure there will be a way, they will find a way to make everybody happy. But yeah, if you tell me, do you want to see PSG Barcelona every week? I would say, yeah, especially if there's no remontadas.
Ale, Jules, thank you very much. You want more from Jules? Make sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Boys record twice a week. Don't miss a single episode.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
AC Milan, 3 points clear of second place Inter as we head to a key weekend in Serie A. Napoli third with a game in hand, Roma fourth, Juventus the nine-time defending champs outside the top four and 10 points off the lead as we welcome back Stuart Robson to look ahead to the weekend in the Italian top flight. Let's start with the league leaders, AC Milan. hosting sixth place Atalanta, Rabo. Atalanta's always fun to watch, but how stiff a test will they be for AC Milan?
There'll be a massive test for AC Milan, because AC Milan has still got players out. They've also got Romagnoli suspended. Salamakers, who came on and got sent off in the last game against Cagliari. So it's a very depleted Milan squad. And Atalanta, up until the last couple of games where Gasperini changed his squad, were in top form. They've beaten sides 4-1, 5-1. They've been absolutely outstanding. And on their day, they can cause people problems. And I'm sure they're going to cause AC Milan a lot of problems here. And I think this could be the game where AC Milan just drop away from that top position and lose the game.
At the exact same time AC Milan plays on Saturday, Inter will visit Udinese. Rabo, up and down season for Inter so far. No doubt about that. But they got to come into this one flying high, not just after the victory over Juventus, but really the performance.
Well, the performance was much better than I've seen from Inter over the course of the season. The one thing that they've been having a problem with is conceding early goals. Well, they didn't do that against Juventus. They played at a high tempo. They got the ball forward into the front areas quickly. They got it into the wide areas and got crosses into the box. And they defended much better all around the pitch. And that's what they've got to do against an Udinese side who, against Atalanta in midweek, scored an early goal and then defended really well. So Inter can't afford to concede that early goal. I think they'll win the game. I think they'll win it comfortably. But they have to be at the same sort of level of performance as they were against Juventus.
Speaking of Juventus and speaking of up and down, that's been the week for Juve, basically. You lose against Inter and then you come back in the Supercoppa against Napoli and get the victory. What do we make of this up and down Juve team?
Well, you just said it, inconsistent. I think they know how they want to play. They know the formation. They know how they almost play with a three-and-a-half-man defence. They try to get one of the wing-backs high up the field one side. They like to get one of the midfield players in behind the front two. They would like to get the front two working together, but Ronaldo wants to go here, there and everywhere at times. They've changed the players. They changed the personnel. Pirlo, when things start to go wrong, makes, I think, poor substitutions, and he makes lots of substitutions just for the sake of it. So they're inconsistent at the moment. They need to play at the same level as they did against Napoli. They were very poor last week against Inter. There was no creativity in midfield. The defenders, and the wide defenders in the back three, didn't pass the ball well enough into the front areas. And Ronaldo went away from where he should be, a centre forward. So if they play well against Bologna, who have got a one or two players on the counter-attack, Orsolini's a good player, Barrow's a good player down the other side, it's a game Juventus should win.
Rabo, you mentioned Andrea Pirlo. Impressed or unimpressed so far with what he's done with Juventus?
A bit of both. I think he's got to be given time because he's a young manager. He's not got that much experience, obviously. He came straight into the job. That's what the Juventus board knew that when they gave him the job, that he's got no experience. And sometimes you have to learn on the job. He's made mistakes. I think he tried to overcomplicate it at the start. He wasn't quite sure what his system was going to be. I can now see what his system is. But he's got to get more out of the players. I think he's got to get more discipline out of one or two players. And I'll mention Ronaldo again. He's got to get him to play where he wants him to play. And when Aaron Ramsey plays, he's got to get him to do his job both defensively and in attack. So I think he's got some better performances out of certain players. I think he's got to use the likes of Kulusevski better. But at the moment, it's 50-50.
All right, thanks, Rabo. We'll see you back here on Saturday for plenty more Serie A analysis. Here's a look at the schedule for the top flight this weekend in Italy. By the way, Juventus is early on Sunday. That match on ESPN2 when they host Bologna. The rest of the games, as you can see, they're all on ESPN+. That includes AC Milan and Inter Milan playing at the same time, 12 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday. Don't miss any of that. And don't miss the latest edition of the Serie Awesome podcast. Dropped today. You can download it over on our website. Kay, Matteo, Nikki, and Mina discuss the Supercoppa, plus Inter's big league win over Juventus, and much more. Manchester United ahead of Manchester City in the Premier League table, but where it really matters, Shaka Hislop's power rankings, it is the citizens ahead of the Red Devils. Here are Shaka's latest top 10. Mr. Hislop, how do you explain your choices?
Quite easily, in all honesty, Seb. Where do you want me to start? I don't think anybody can question any one of those. Bayern are back in, Rangers drop all the way down, suspects at the top, Leicester are in and doing well. Not even Jules or Stewie can find any kind of fault with that top 10. None. I'm confident of it.
Interesting. Rangers were number one last week. By the way, Shaka, you got almost 51,000 YouTube views on Shaka's power rankings. I won't tell you what the comments said. You'll have to go and read those yourself. Jules, any comments on Shaka's top 10?
Where's Sporting? Sporting are having an incredible season in Portugal. You know, like far better than what we expected, far better than a lot of the other teams that make that top 10.
Far better than who? Sporting are having a better time right now than who? Sporting were in a couple of weeks
They're unbeaten. They're still in the cup.
They draw a couple of weeks ago. And
it's a young team with a young manager.
What I'd like to ask Shaka, you need more than that to be in this top 10.
What I'd like to ask you, who's pulling the strings? Who's pulling the strings for Besiktas at the moment? Who's the star players for Besiktas as you got them in the top 10? Yeah, I thought so.
Slips me right now.
You haven't seen them play, have you?
But they're ready.
No stars. It's a team approach for Besiktas, according to Shaka.
Thank you. With a very young manager or something like that. Yeah, right. Give me a chance, Jules, but a young team with a young manager. You need more than that to be in this top 10.
U.S. women looking to make it 2-for-2 against Colombia after a 4-0 win Monday night in Orlando. Two sides will meet again at Exploria Stadium Friday. It'll be on ESPN2, 7 o'clock Eastern Time. I'll be on comms alongside with World Cup champion and Olympic champion Julie Foudy, who joins us now here on ESPN FC. Julie, let's revisit real quickly that match from Monday night. Sam Mewis with a hat trick. I'm not just talking about the game against Colombia, but really over the last year, can you think of anybody else in the U.S. women's national team pool who's playing better than Mewis? Because I can't.
No, I agree with you. She has been on fire. I mean, testament in that hat trick, her first ever in a U.S. jersey. But she's got 7 goals in her last 9 games. And I know it's been a weird year, so 9 games has taken about a year to play. And on top of that, Sebastian, she's playing really well over in Manchester for Man City. So she's got 6 goals on the year there. And I mean, this is a very good player, as we've known for a very long time. But I have never seen her look this good, this confident, this informed. So I think by far she is the best player on the national team right at this moment.
Another interesting note about Monday is it's the first game since Vlatko Andonovski, the new manager, made Becky Sauerbrunn the captain. And not just a co-captain situation like we've seen in the past where the armband gets passed around. She is the only captain now moving forward for the U.S. women's national team. I wonder what you think of the move and just how important the captaincy is within this group.
I think it's a great move. I think Becky Sauerbrunn makes for an excellent captain because she checks all the boxes, right? She's a great human. She's a great leader. She's so well respected. She's a great player. She does a ton of the work for the team. She rolls up her sleeves. She's invested. She's shown that year in and year out. Whether she was the captain in the past or not, she handled that really well also. And so I think it's great news that they've given her the captain's armband. But I also think, to your question about how important that role is, one of the things that has always been a mainstay with the U.S. women's national team is it's a captain by committee and it's captain by community. I mean, when I was a captain, you had all these incredible veterans around you who helped you lead the team. And Becky's in a very similar situation. She's got wonderful teammates and players and veterans with wisdom surrounding her. And so, yes, it is important that she got the armband and she gets that recognition, but really it is going to be captain by committee because that's how we've always operated on that team. And I think it's a healthy way to lead, actually.
Made it a couple minutes into this segment without mentioning Stanford, so let's get that out of the way. I'll mention it in the context of Katerina Macario's debut for the U.S. women's national team. Brazilian-born, just got FIFA clearance to represent the U.S. She leaves Stanford over. She's going overseas. She leaves Stanford early to go overseas and play for Lyon professionally. There's so much hype right now around this player. I wonder what you thought of her debut, and does she actually have a chance to break into this tight Olympic roster?
I think the hype, and we've seen this around younger players before. We've seen this around Mallory Pugh. We saw it somewhat around Sophia Smith, although she wasn't able to play in that last game because of an injury in warm-up. But I think it's warranted the hype because Caterina Macario is a special player. I mean, watching her at Stanford and the way she was able to dominate the college game, mind you, again, this is a different level than the college game. But the thing about Cat, and I was impressed by her performance her first time because she looks so confident, so calm. And that's always been what makes her so special is this calmness on the field. She's got this grace on the field, but also beyond her scoring abilities, which we saw at Stanford, she can play make. She can be versatile. She can play midfield. She can play up front. She can play in the 9. She can play in the 11. And so that's where I actually think she has a chance at a young age because of that versatility, because, as we'll talk about, the cut-down roster for Olympics being only 18, a chance to possibly sneak into this bubble of 18 because she brings all those skill sets and because she already, at only 22 years old, in her first ever national team cap, looks so comfortable.
So you mentioned Mallory Pugh in there. We didn't see her Monday night. Not only did she not play, she didn't even dress. For those who don't know, I mean, I'll remind you, this is a player who, as a teenager, was starting for the U.S. in the Olympics in a knockout game against Sweden in 2016. I know she's just 22, but if we do see her on Friday, Julie, how close to last chance saloon is this for Mallory Pugh?
Well, we won't see her on Friday. Vlatko Andonovski just said on a call that she picked up an injury her third day in training here at this camp. So she only had 2 days with the team. Third day picked up the injury. She didn't play on Monday. She's not going to play on Friday, which is unfortunate, to your point, because this has been an ongoing battle for Mal Pugh to get back into this mix. And there's all these setbacks that keep happening, whether it's injury, she's out of form. She's just had a string of terrible luck. But mind you, the most important sentence in there is the fact that you said she's still 22 years old. So this is a player who hit the ground running very early with a lot of expectations and hype, and I do think still has a ton of upside. She is only 22. Mind you, it hasn't materialized in the way people had hoped with her success at the Olympics in 2016, but I do think if she can get herself healthy, if she can get a little bit of consistency on her belt, then this is a player at 22 that still has some upside, so I am not counting her out yet. No way.
Right, so we're looking ahead to Friday, and people say, U.S. huge favorites over Colombia. Why should I watch this match? In the context of an Olympic year, it's really, really important. You can take 23 players, Julie, to a World Cup. You can only take 18 players to the Olympics. So we know that the fight for those spots is going to be very intense over the next couple months. Are there any superstars, big-name players, who might be on the so-called bubble?
Well, I think, yes, I think the two biggest names are on the bubble just because of the time off. Now, mind you, people will hear that and go, wait, what? You're not going to take Megan Rapinoe or Carly Lloyd? And I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is with a year layoff, Carly Lloyd will be 39 come the Olympics, if it happens in July of 2021. And Megan Rapinoe will have just turned 36. Now, you could argue, because we'll have to see these next coming months, that the long layoff was necessary. For Carly, it was injury. For Megan Rapinoe, she had COVID concerns and she didn't feel like her training environment was appropriate to allow her to get back into game fitness. So she took off more time and just rested. So two ways it could go. One, it was great for their body. They're rested, they're back. Because as we know, it's a very tight turn. If the Olympics usually happen the very year after the World Cup, it's a very hard turn for older players because of that exhaustion. So it could be great news that these two are rested and they're back. Or, in the coming months we'll tell, it could have been too long of a layoff. And that runway is actually too long to get back to the level they were at. So the next months are going to be very telling. But those two in particular, I think, are two that Vlatko Andonovski is going to be looking at. And I don't think he actually cares about age. He wants to see, can they come back to form? Can they be game changers? Because with a roster of 18, you cannot afford to take someone that's not 100% fit or actually is going to be able to make a difference when they come off the bench, because you just don't have the players.
Julie, thanks as always. Looking forward to our call on Friday night as the U.S. women face off against Colombia. If you want more U.S. women's national team content, head over to our website. Julie with a column over there on what stands between the U.S. and another Olympic gold medal this summer.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Jules mentioned it early on the show, but worth a revisit. Barcelona needing extra time to move past Cornea, a third division side in the Copa del Rey. Worth noting, Cornea also the same team that eliminated Atleti from this competition. All right, that's all we've got for today's edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to Shaka, Stewart, Alejandro, and Jules for joining us. Thanks to you for watching, and we'll see you next time here in the ESPN FC studios. Stuart Robson, Shaka Hislop, join me for today's edition of Extra Time. Guys, let's get right into it. Of course, we nearly saw a scrap between Jurgen Klopp and Sean Dyche at halftime of the Liverpool-Burnley match. First question, who would win in a fight, Klopp or Dyche? Robbo, who are you taking?
I'm going to go for Dyche. I think he's a bit more solid in his build. I don't think Jurgen Klopp fancied the fight with Dyche. I'd go for Dyche every day. I think he could play dirty as well, I'd imagine.
Yeah, he looked like he fancied the fight walking down that tunnel. Shaka, who do you think would win?
Yeah, I've got Dyche all day long. I mean, it was kind of a typical Great Dane against a Chihuahua in the tunnel where the Chihuahua is making all the noise and running up and down, and the Great Dane just kind of looked back and thought, I'm not wasting my time with this. I'm just going to walk on. And that's kind of how it looked. Klopp making all kinds of noise, and Dyche couldn't be less bothered. I've got Dyche in a fight.
That's West Ham legend
Sebi,
Shaka Hislop comparing Klopp to a Chihuahua. Robbo?
Let me tell you, Sebi, Jurgen Klopp would not want to get in a fight with anybody. He's just spent about £20,000 on those teeth, those new teeth he had a couple of years ago.
Yeah, glow in the dark.
Knocked out.
You're right. Shaka, are you excited for the upcoming friendly between the U.S. men's national team and Trinidad and Tobago? Are you hoping to attend? This one will be played January 31st in Orlando. Shaka, are you going to be there?
I most certainly will not be there. I don't plan to go outside of my house and Bristol, Connecticut, ESPN, when as needed. If I'm excited about it, no, I'm not. The US won in the last two international games, 12-2 in an aggregate. Trinidad and Tobago hasn't played for far too long. We're over 100 in FIFA World Rankings. New coach, new administration. But I'm worried. I just feel that this is too big a bite.
Bravo, you love a good question about a right back. Stewart, is Cancelo the best right back in the league right now?
He's a good right back, and at least you've pronounced his name right this time, rather than the last time I was on Extra Time and you pronounced somebody's Simon Chair, I think you called him.
I did. Thank you for bringing that up, Bravo. That was a week ago.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I didn't hear it, so I answered rather stupid. Anyway,
you can't tell people.
Playing very well at the moment. He played well on the right-hand side. He's played well on the left-hand side. He's a good player, but I don't think he's the best the right back in the Premier League at the moment. He might not even be the best right back at Manchester City on certain occasions.
Who is the Danish bloke's name that I messed up?
Simon Kjær, I think. It's Simon Kjær.
Oh, okay. There you go. Just so eloquent, Robbo.
Robbo holds a grudge, doesn't he? I mean, that's a weird grudge to hold all this time. You mispronounced his name last time, or was that Extra Time?
No, hang on. The reason I say it, Shaka, is because I then answered the question because I hadn't got a clue who he was talking about, and I had to. I thought, I don't know this bloke, so I'm just going to say, well, at the moment, he's not the best player in Serie A. If I'd have known it was Simon Kjær, I could have spoken about him.
Yeah. Well, we know.
That's all right, Robbo. That's how I answer all my questions. I have no idea who anybody's talking about. I'm just rolling with the punches.
I'm the backup host here for many reasons. Primarily, it's because Dan Thomas is so good at pronunciations. I think that's really what it's all about. What were the most embarrassing? embarrassing... Oh, speaking of, what were the most embarrassing mistakes that you ever made in a match? Shaka, you know, just as a goalie, I'm sure there's a lot there. But Robbo, for you, is there a big one that stands out?
Yes, I would say there was one that I still have nightmares over. I was playing at right back for West Ham against Southampton, and the ball came over, and I was the left winger was a very quick player called Danny Wallace, and I tried to pass it back to the goalkeeper, underhit it. Danny Wallace went past the goalkeeper. Tom McAllister was the West Ham goalkeeper and scored. And yeah, I was embarrassed and didn't enjoy the next week getting loads of stick about it.
Shaka, your worst blooper?
I've spoken about this before. This was I was playing for Pompey away to Charlton. We went 1-0 down, and then Patrick Berger, formerly of Liverpool, scored a volley from about 40 yards. I mean, it would have been contender for goal of the season easily. I mean, incredible goal to tie it up at 1-1. And then in the 89th minute, Charlton get a break. Somebody hits a shot, totally mishits it, kicks the floor. The ball comes bubbling to me, and somehow it managed to squirm under me and go in for Charlton to win at the death 2-1. I couldn't look Patrick in the eye. I played in a Masters event with Patrick Berger about years ago, and was still apologizing to him for that mistake 6 years ago. This has been 15 years after the incident. It was that bad.
All right. Yeah, it's hard to forget those. What was your go-to drink in your playing days? I think this is on-field, like training session drinks. Did you use boring water or a more exotic drink? Robbo, were there sports drinks back in your day?
Absolutely not. And this shows how long ago I was playing football. We used to train.
It was tea.
There was two parts of the training ground at Arsenal, and you did one session on one side, and then you used to walk through the dressing rooms to get to the other part of the training ground. And Don Howe, the coach, wouldn't let you drink water because he said it would make you get stitched. So you're always dehydrated. But we never knew anything different. So we never had water, never had rehydration drinks or anything like that. No wonder everybody was unfit.
Sorry, Robbo, when you say stitch, is that you mean like cramp?
Mm-hmm.
Cramping, okay.
Cramp, yes, right. Yeah, cramping, yeah. The stomach, yeah.
So water gives you cramps.
Say, don't drink anything. Yeah, don't drink anything.
To be fair, that is exactly what I was told growing up. So now, playing football in Trinidad and Tobago, where it's 184 degrees every single day, you're playing football all day long, and you can't drink water because it gives you a stitch, and if you don't, it actually improves your fitness. That was the thinking back in the day.
Right. Sounds like real science to me. I don't know what you guys are complaining about. Final question here. Stuart, since you often like to bring up Shaka's Maserati, were you surprised to see Shaka's favorite player, Mikel Antonio, crash his Lamborghini while dressed as a snowman? This was actually, I think, quite a while ago, but as a result of this incident, his insurance now costs him £20,000. Incredible. Robbo, what do you think?
Well, I know when Shaka was driving his red Maserati with the roof down outside the school gates all those years ago, his number plate of Shaka, that cost more than £20,000. And the insurance for all the accidents he had, I think that must have been £20,000. So I think Mikel Antonio has got it quite cheap, really, compared with Shaka.
Shaka, when did you start dressing up as a snowman?
Just to clear things up here, because this is sounding a little off. First of all, I did not have a red Maserati. I did not have a convertible Maserati. And when Robbo is talking about me driving around the school gates, he means to pick my kids up. Right. Just to clear up any uncertainty.
Thank
pick
you.
My kids up.
Okay.
Just to be clear.
Did you have a number plate saying Shaka?
Huh?
Did you have a number plate that read Shaka?
I had a number plate that read...
That silence is golden.
It didn't read... Shaka, to your exact question, it was an array of letters otherwise. Mm-hmm.
Shaka, did you ever pick your kids up from school in a snowman outfit or crash your car
in a
snowman outfit?
That I never did. I never drove wearing any odd outfits, and thankfully I've not crashed my car with my kids in it.
Robbo, final word?
I don't think I've crashed my car.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, there was a one-way system in this school car park, because my kids went to the same school as Shaka's did, and everybody adhered to it. You'd go down one way. There was one person that always used to go the wrong way down the one-way system, just because they wanted to get out a little bit quicker, and it was a Maserati with Shaka written on the back. That's all I'll say.
Excuse me, I'm Shaka Hislop, Hammer of the Year. I'm not sure if you know, but
that's not,
I'll be cutting to the front of the line.
That is true. Don't encourage him, Seb. Don't encourage him.
No more encouraging here. No more encouraging. We'll leave it at that. Shaka, Rabo, thank you very much. Plenty more extra time on tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray will be here to lead the charge. Don't miss it.